Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. Wendy, who's normally here, is not here again today. She'll be back on Monday. She's having a vacation. Harry Tynowitz is sitting in. Hello, Harry.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Couldn't be better. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Really happy to be here.
It's ironic that you're here today because today, as you know, is the All-Star Game. And
yes.
I know what a history you have, a long, wonderful history with sports. Here's my question to you. When we were kids, the All-Star Game was a big deal.
Right.
Like we looked forward to it for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that it holds that intrinsic value anymore, does it?
Well, maybe for us, but not for, like, our kids.
Didn't they make an announcement a year or so ago where they said the average watcher of the All-Star Game is in their mid-50s now? Now, that didn't used to be the case. It was always kids watching the All-Star Game.
Right, and the average watcher used to like tuna fish and wheat, but
right.
Now he likes raisin bread on chicken salad on raisin toast.
Very controversial.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's just, you know, video games have taken over. My kids, video games.
Yeah.
You know, my son, video games. My daughter, she could be doing a million social things, but I still get a big kick out of the All-Star Game. It has one of the dumbest rules in sports.
Which is?
Which is that you have to have a representative of each team.
You don't think that should be?
Are you telling me that Steve Swisher was not All-Star caliber?
He was.
Congratulations, we have a winner. Steve knows exactly the best example of a guy that should not have been the All-Star team.
So there was a year that the Cubs didn't have a very strong team, and you have to pick somebody, at least one representative of every team, so that your city watches.
Mm-hmm.
And this city, we rallied behind catcher Steve Swisher.
Yes, whose son would play for the White Sox.
Nick Swisher.
Yes, yeah. Dirty 30, they called him.
Yeah.
Good thing his number was 30.
Do you think, now in the last couple of years, they've made it that whichever team wins the All-Star Game, that league gets home field advantage in the World Series?
Right.
That's ridiculous, too, isn't it?
That is ridiculous. But they stopped doing that now.
Oh, did they?
Yes,
yeah.
They stopped doing that.
Good.
Because that was a ridiculous thing. That was a Bud Selig thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they said, we've had enough of that.
When I was growing up and was a diehard baseball fan, I mean, every day, every game, I used to hate the All-Star break.
Why?
Because it was 3 days with no baseball, and now it's 5, isn't it?
Well,
four.
But the Cubs will actually play Thursday. So the only game Thursday will be the Cubs and the Cardinals.
And so everyone else has 5 days off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're an All-Star.
Right.
Like
right.
Steve Swisher type.
Everybody plays Sunday, and they don't play again until Friday. Well,
yeah.
It was weird for me not having a baseball game to watch Sunday night.
Yeah.
But I think the All-Star Game is cool, and I love these old, like they were showing the 83 All-Star Game last year,
yeah,
which was the 50th anniversary. So you guys know, I'm going to have to tell you, that the first All-Star Game was in Chicago.
At Comiskey.
At Comiskey, and
yeah.
Arch Ward, the guy that was the Tribune sports editor, it was his idea.
Yeah.
And then 50 years later, on the exact same day, they played the 50th All-Star Game. Strange how that worked. And it was the first and only time that there was a Grand Slam hit in the All-Star Game.
I'm going to tell you who hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Freddie Lynn?
It was Freddie Lynn. How did he do it, ladies and
gentlemen? It was, wasn't it?
Bill Lepp.
Of the Boston
yes.
Red Sox. I was at that game.
Yes, I believe he was an Angel at that time.
Can I tell you a weird story about that
you
game?
You were at that game?
I was at that game.
Were you on third base when he hit the Grand Slam?
No. My dad's company had, I've talked about this in the past. We were very fortunate when I was growing up. My dad's company had season tickets to both the Cubs and the White Sox, and we went all the time. We were
awesome.
Always at Cubs or
awesome.
White Sox games. So for the All-Star Game, the opportunity was there, if you had season tickets, to get a couple of extra tickets at a reduced rate, which my dad did. And I got a ticket, and my brother also got a ticket. And as we're walking on our way to Comiskey Park, people are desperate to see this All-Star Game, so the prices just got higher and higher and higher. They were offering us, and at some point, I think the highest we heard was $500 per ticket.
Whoa.
And my brother, you know, when you're a kid, that's like $1 million.
Did Adam sell his ticket?
He was this close. And I got to be honest, as much as I love baseball, I was this close too. We were both that close. But I mean, it was fun to watch the game, but then you say to yourself, was it $500 worth of fun?
You saw the only Grand Slam. You saw Grand Slam in All-Star history.
I know. And that was the year that Ron Kittle was a rookie for the White Sox,
mm-hmm.
and he played on that All-Star team, and it was very exciting to see him. He did very, very well in that game. He wasn't the MVP, was he? Was Fred Lynn the MVP of that game?
I would guess Freddie Lynn would have been the MVP.
That makes sense.
Yes, maybe Fahey Flynn.
Fahey Flynn was the MVP. But oh, Dave Edit coming in knows a little bit more about this than we do. Dave, who was the MVP of that game? Do you remember the 50th All-Star game?
I was at that game also.
You were also there.
I'm not sure who the MVP was.
Dave offered
me
$500 for my ticket.
And I think it was Fred Lynn.
I think it was.
I think it was. Now, I don't know if you guys mentioned this already because I was actually walking through the office.
Yeah.
But do you know what is historic about that Fred Lynn moment?
It was the only Grand Slam in the All-Star Game history.
And to this day.
Still has, yeah.
It's
yeah,
crazy,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Did you say that already? I'm sorry.
We alluded to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And you know who he hit it off?
He hit it off of Atlee Hammaker.
Hammaker. Of the
okay,
Giants.
I'm leaving. You
no,
guys
no, no,
know
no,
everything.
No, we don't. We don't. Stay. Tell us. Ask us more questions. Ask us, like, what team the American League played. We don't have any idea.
I think it was.
Hey, I'll give you a hint.
Was it the National League, Harry? I can't remember. It was a long time ago.
No, they played the Washington Generals.
Oh, that's right. That's
remember,
right, that's
they
right.
always lose.
But now, here's the one good thing about the All-Star game. Unlike other major sports, like when you watch the NBA All-Star game, the score is 162 to 153,
mm-hmm.
right? When you watch the
right.
NHL All-Star game,
they don't care.
It's 16 to 11.
Right.
These guys really do want to look good and make it a game. You know,
and you know, they play defense.
They do actually play defense. You're right.
And,
yeah.
I know we've had a couple of teams that have switched leagues in the last 20 years, but they really do care. Like, American leaguers want to beat the National League, and National leaguers want to beat the American League. Even if you have that stupid Bud Selig rule, you know, put away.
Yeah.
You know, still the American leaguers want to win. The National yeah. leaguers want to win. I think, and the fact that it's played in mid-season, all these other All-Star games are, you know, like, just exhibitions, but baseball really, you know, gets into it.
I think it's the tradition of it because, I mean, I think baseball got it right of all the sports. I think, you know, football tried with the college All-Star game, which used to be played in Chicago,
right.
which was the Super Bowl champs and the NFL champs against the college All-Stars.
That's an interesting twist.
Which died in the 70s, died a rainy death at Soldier Field. But
yeah. Walter Payton, I think, played in the last one as a college.
Not the last one. Not I was the at last the last one. One. But that was...
Dave, you're like the Forrest Gump of sports. Every time we mention a milestone in sports, no matter what it is.
I was at the 50th anniversary All-Star game at
Comiskey
Park. I
remember when Dr. James Naismith put up the first basket.
Yeah, I was there for that.
With Jim Thorpe, won the Olympic gold.
It was the Pittsburgh Steelers against the college All-Stars at Soldier Field. Would have been, I think, like 76, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
And,
that sounds
they would
right.
play it right before the other NFL preseason games began.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And anyway, but the baseball All-Star game, I think they hit on something. They got it right. Here it is. This will be the 89th tonight. And you guys remember, they used to play two All-Star
yeah.
games a year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Man, that would have been something. If they play, they would play
back
them,
to back or just spread them out throughout the year? Do you know?
They would spread. I think they played them like about a month apart.
Oh,
I want to say.
I wonder why. Just because it was
they
a
didn't
revenue.
Do it for very long.
No.
No, you know, the thing about the All-Star game, we were just talking about it, is they have that rule that every team has to be represented.
Harry says that needs to go away. Do you agree?
Isn't that kind of unfair? There are great players that don't get to make it because they're taking a guy from every city.
Yes, but. Again, I mean, I think tradition is such an important part of it, and I think that the idea that your All-Star is going to go out there, he might not get in the game, but he's going to go out there when they introduce the players from both teams.
Right.
It's a big moment.
Yeah,
I mean, I would tune into the All-Star game when I was a kid just to see that one guy from the team I cheered for.
Steve Swisher.
Yeah,
possibly.
1 year it was. Yeah,
yeah.
Dave, thanks so much. We're greatly appreciated.
Sure, I got to go back. I have a meeting with Atlee Hammaker.
You're meeting with Atlee Hammaker right now. We'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show coming your way.
What are the odds of that?
A million to one shot.
The password is Jindra.
Did you say Ginger, or what did you say?
I said Ginger.
No, it's not Ginger. She's
no.
on Gilligan's Island.
Yes.
It's Jindra.
Jindra.
Jindra. Bill Leff, it's Harry Tynowitz, Sarah Jindra. Yesterday during the show, Anna Balaval sat where
yes,
you were sitting.
Yes.
From the WJN TV Morning News.
I heard her. She was lovely.
She is lovely.
She's married to a Jewish folk.
Yeah. Yep. She is slightly more exotic than you are. You have. All right. You can debate that.
Yeah.
You can debate that. So because we were doing the show, we did not get to hear the press conference that took place between the president of the United States, that's your Donald Trump, and Putin from the Russia. They had a joint press conference, so we didn't get to hear it. After the show, I felt the need to watch this press conference, and I did. And I know that anytime we discuss politics, I understand that there are people that are very angry one way, or there are people that are very angry the other way. And how can't you be? It brings up your ire, is what it does. Anyway, all throughout this, I kept saying to myself, this is a key moment in American history right now. I wonder what Arnold Schwarzenegger thinks of what's going on. Well, this morning, Arnold Schwarzenegger weighed in on what he thinks he saw yesterday. Would you like to hear that?
I would love to hear that.
All right, Jasmine, if you would.
President Trump, I just saw your press conference with President Putin, and it was embarrassing. I mean, you stood there like a little wet noodle, like a little fanboy. I mean, I was asking myself, when are you going to ask him for an autograph or for a selfie or something like that? I mean, you literally sold out at this press conference our intelligence community, our justice system, and worst of all, our country. You're the president of the United States. You shouldn't do that. I mean, what's the matter with you? I mean, whatever happened to the strong words or to the strength of Ronald Reagan when he stood there at the Berlin Wall and he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall? What happened to all that?
That's the best. Jess, thanks. That is by far the best part of it at the very end when Schwarzenegger just goes, I wish
my husband would do the whole thing.
I understand he's upset. He's a former governor. Which, if you'll remember, the reaction was very similar to when Donald Trump announced that he was running he wanted to be the president. The same kind of reaction when Schwarzenegger said, I want to be the governor of California. Everybody went, well, wouldn't that be funny if he was the governor of California? And then he was.
It was much better.
You get mixed reaction on that. I think to those of us in the Midwest who only saw him every once in a while be the governor, play the role of governor of California, we were impressed by it. But I've heard so many people I know in California go, he wasn't a very good governor. He wasn't a little wet noodle, as he just described the president.
Right.
But, all right. So I understand him getting upset. You know, it's time to get upset. I'm with him 100% on that. It's just when he speaks now, I hear Hans and Franz from Saturday Night Live. I don't even hear a guy. I hear Hans and Franz.
He was, you know, I wonder if there's like any fallout from Arnold took over the Celebrity Apprentice, right?
And it didn't go well.
It didn't go well.
Right.
And Trump, you know, loved pointing that out, that this big Hollywood actor, well, more a movie star than an actor, but this big Hollywood movie star, you know, couldn't make his show work. Only he could make it work.
Right.
But, you know, Schwarzenegger just like a fumble yesterday pounced on what Trump, you know, said or what he didn't say.
Yeah.
And there you have it.
There was a point in the press conference yesterday where they asked Donald Trump about who he trusts, if he trusts American intelligence or if he trusts Russia. And his answer was about the Electoral College and how the Electoral College favors the Democrats and stuff like that. He does that thing, and, you know, we were all kids at one point. You know when you're in school and they ask you a question, sometimes it's on a test and you don't know the answer, so you go, here's my strategy is I'll just keep saying stuff until whoever's grading the paper just goes, I give up. I can't even. So as the president, he now does that. They ask him questions. And he goes, I'm just going to say stuff. I'm just going to talk.
And the only way he knows the Electoral College is because he played the game of landslide.
Right.
And so he understands how many votes Texas has and Illinois and California.
By the way, he got his numbers wrong when he gave the electoral count yesterday. It's one of the minor things he got wrong, but he also got that wrong.
He said Putin has offered to have his Russian investigators investigate if Russia interfered in the election.
That seems trustworthy.
Look there.
They would play fair.
That'd be like, That'd be like, you know, some wife accuses her husband of cheating.
Right.
Honey, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll check this out.
Right.
Billy, I came home and noticed the cookie jar was broken.
Right. Do you know anything about this?
No? Well, then good. Would you investigate it?
Right. Right. It's very, very similar.
He's, you know, and I mean, there's a certain percentage of people that love Trump.
Yeah.
But, you know, Schwarzenegger, just like, the size, great.
But even if I was one of those people, even if I voted for him, even if I liked him, at some point you got to look at everything that's going on and go, all right, maybe this wasn't the best decision in the world. Maybe.
Right. You know, I understand why people voted for Trump. They wanted a change. They didn't want another politician. So I understand why. But now here we are. And
but I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people that looks at politics and goes, this is tainted. Politics is really tainted. And the politicians are tainted. I get that. But I think from now on, when we look at guys, because now everybody from The Rock to Oprah Winfrey to name your favorite celebrity is toying at the idea of running for president.
Cynthia Nixon.
Well, she's just not running for president. She's running for governor of New York, right?
Right.
But and I know that in the past we've had people run for office, and some of them have done well, and they haven't had any political background. But I think now for most of us who are voters, who understand the importance of your vote, for these novelty people to come along, like Oprah Winfrey, and I'm sorry, Oprah Winfrey is a wonderful woman who has done fantastic things. She should not be the president of the United States.
She made an awesome speech, but she should not be president.
Based on a speech, that's not enough.
Right.
You wouldn't get behind. All right, let's say you were flying somewhere. Let's say you were flying from Chicago to New York, and the guy who's the pilot goes, I've always wanted to be a pilot. I haven't really trained for it. I've never done anything in the past, but I've seen planes, so I think I can do a pretty good job of flying your plane. You wouldn't get on that plane.
No, I don't want him flying my plane.
No.
No, that's not the way it works.
No.
I remember the Good Humor Man when I was a kid, the Good Humor Man by our house ran for president.
He did?
Yes, and he would give you, and he would pass out like his little campaign card with a free ice cream bar. And so, you know, I'm nine. I wanted this guy to win. You know, I was going to get a free ice cream bar every day if this guy was president.
It seems like a slight conflict of interest, doesn't it? Just a little?
Maybe. You know, but how much would you love it now?
Yeah, I guess.
Instead of Trump, we had a Good Humor Man.
Maybe. All right. Thanks, Steve. Still left with Terry Tynowitz. Terry's filling in for Wendy Snyder, who will return on Monday. She's on vacation. Terry, during our talk there about President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, we brought Arnold Schwarzenegger into the mix. Not happy with yesterday's proceedings, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you were going back and forth. You said actor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I don't wait, movie star Arnold Schwarzenegger. Which one is Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I would say he is definitely a movie star. To me, an actor is someone who takes a role and becomes that character. And you believe that person is that character. To me, a movie star is somebody who you go, oh, God, T2 is coming out. I want to go see Terminator 2. Schwarzenegger is going to kick some butt in this one.
So let's go with actors who are acting currently. Who would you say is our top actor, and who would you say is our top movie star?
And
is that easy to do or hard to do?
Well, no, I think what's hard to do is find the guys that cross over.
Oh,
find the guys
that's
that
a better
are
question.
Find the guys that are both.
Right.
Like if I could offer one, I would say Denzel. Denzel Washington, to me, is both a quality actor, but he's also a movie star. In that you would get people that say, well, I want to go see Denzel do anything.
Yeah.
You know, but I think there's certain people that are just, you know, like, you know, movie stars.
Right.
Like Will Ferrell's a movie star. He doesn't claim to be.
But you can be a passable actor. You almost have to be a fairly passable actor to front a film. Right? Wouldn't you agree?
Well, unless you're like you know, a comic genius or a comic personality, I think that's where you get away with it.
Every text is saying the same thing. What about Liam Hemsworth? Every single text we have says, "What, Harry? What about Liam Hemsworth?
Movie star.
Movie star, not an actor.
Wouldn't you agree?
What about Chris Hemsworth?
The brother.
Yeah,
I would say he would be a movie
also,
star as well.
Yeah, he's a movie star.
Yeah,
right.
Would you agree?
It's really tough. I know there's guys. Like, all right, Wendy and I have discussed this on the show. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is the highest paid actor of all time.
He is.
Of all time. But then you say...
Cannot be debated.
Right. He makes more money than any other actor in history. Actor in italics. So then you say to yourself, if you had to list the 1,000 greatest actors of all time, would Dwayne Johnson's name even be near that list? And I think the answer is no. Right?
Right.
But for some reason, because he's a handsome guy, he's a personal, he knows which way to face when they yell, shoot, he knows, okay, the camera's there, I got to look that way. you know, they put him in charge of movies. He's the star of movies, hey, but he's not a good actor. He's not an actor.
I like him. You know, my wife likes him.
Right.
My kids like him.
You know who else is like that is? Do you know who John Cena is?
Oh, sure.
He's a wrestler.
Sure.
So he also now
don't have to say John Cena.
That's right. That's the way you're supposed to introduce him. Right.
Yeah.
So that's another guy that you go. It's just a big, strong guy who's in the starring role in a movie, but he's not an actor, really. But he is,
well,
you know. It's.
I mean, I think there's been very few in history that are both.
I'm trying to think of like who would be. Denzel Washington is a pretty good call. That's a guy.
What don't you think?
Who legitimately acts, but then also
has that star power that he
right.
could just carry a bad script. He could
right.
just, you know, you'd say, "I want to go see it." I think Paul Newman was like that. I think Paul
Newman.
Oh, that's
a good one, too.
I think Paul Newman was this. I can't believe he won one Oscar.
Right.
You know, for Color of Money. He should have won for Cool Hand Luke.
For Hud.
For Hud.
Yeah.
For, you know, Butch Cassidy.
For Slapshot.
The Sting. Slapshot's one of my all-time yeah. favorite movies.
But what about this? Okay, in the golden days of Hollywood,
yes,
you had a bunch of actors who, I know this will sound awful and I don't mean it to, but it's true, played the same guy in every movie. I love Humphrey Bogart, but Humphrey Bogart always played Humphrey Bogart in a movie. So where would he fall? Would he be an actor or would he be a movie star?
It's a good point, sweetheart.
Oh, you're doing Humphrey Bogart.
Because he's dead. I can impersonate dead actors. Dead entertainer.
Because they don't call angry.
Right, they don't.
No. So where would a guy like Humphrey Bogart be who always... And John Wayne, let's be honest. John Wayne was in 106 movies. With the exception of Genghis Khan, he played John... He was Genghis Khan in a movie. The funniest thing I ever saw in my life. But in every other movie, John Wayne plays John Wayne.
Okay, now I really want to see the Genghis Khan with John Wayne.
It's hysterically bad.
Even when he does, like, cop movies, like McHugh and Brannigan.
Right.
He's still John Wayne.
He's John Wayne.
Right, John Wayne's a movie star.
People say that about Clint Eastwood, though. They go, what movie was Clint Eastwood in where he wasn't playing Clint Eastwood?
Well, I mean, there's... And I get that. I
right?
get that. I mean, I love Clint Eastwood,
yeah.
but I mean, like, the get off my lawn. I mean,
right.
that's a Clint Eastwood line.
Right.
It's a Dirty Harry line.
Right.
But that's also, I mean, he did a great job of acting in that movie.
So where would you throw a guy like him, Clint Eastwood, who, again, an Academy Award winner, he knows how to act.
Yeah, I think at the end he was an actor.
Yeah.
I think he was a movie star for most of his career. I mean,
yeah.
he went to Italy to make movies on the cheap.
Right. The Sergio Leone movies?
Yes.
Yeah.
The spaghetti westerns, if you will.
Yeah, I will.
But I think Clint Eastwood near the, you know, I mean, he's still with us, thank the Lord.
Yeah.
But I think now people look at him as like an actor and a director who
right.
makes awful decisions.
Well,
he made that movie. It's a wonderful story about the Americans who thwarted the terrorist on the train.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he chose to use the actual people that did it.
That was an interesting choice.
Rather than hire actors.
I know. That was a strange choice.
Bizarre.
That didn't necessarily pay off, he learned. Right.
Right. I mean, can't you just... I think Eastwood's been sitting around with friends, having an after-dinner drink for 40 years, going, you know, the next time there's a story like that,
yeah.
we shouldn't even get actors. We should just, you know,
have
get
the real people,
in people
it.
Do it.
All right. Now, here's the most important question in this whole charade. Does this apply to women as well?
Of course.
All right, so give me a woman who's right on that border of being an actress, but not really because she's a movie star. Who would that be?
Well, I mean, the first actress who's really,
Sandra Bullock?
Sandra Bullock's a great choice. And I'd say she's an actress.
More than a movie star.
Right. I'd say Julia Roberts is a movie star.
Oh.
Because she does BAFO box office, no matter what she has.
But is a credible actress.
Yes.
Right?
I think Amy Adams is an actress who is getting big enough to the point where you could say that she's, you know, on the verge of like, movie star.
Jessica Chastain.
Actress.
Ruth Buzzy.
If I had my purse here, I'd smack you over your head.
I deserve it.
I would just clobber you.
I totally deserve
you.
It.
I'd say it's clobbering time.
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer is a comic, and so she can front a movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't call her an actress. But like every once in a while, you'll get like a comic who, okay, are you watching this, I don't know, I don't think you are, when I'm dying up here.
No, it's on Showtime and we don't get Showtime.
Okay. You don't get it?
No, I don't understand it. It's in the house. Right. I just look at it and I don't understand this.
So Brad Garrett, who was Robert on
Everybody Loves Raymond,
plays this 70s comic who is on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, there's this like suicidal, drug taking, you know, boozing, you know, got everything, you know, had everything, lost everything type of comic. He's a wonderful actor.
Yeah, he is. He's a good actor.
Great actor.
Did you see him play Jackie Gleason a few years ago?
Yes, he was really good.
Great. He was very good.
He was great.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, you'll get like a funny guy who happens to like act his pants off.
Yeah.
But, you know, Amy Schumer, I'm still not calling her. I know that her movies are good, you know, that she's doing more than just her stand-up act.
Right.
But I would say Amy Schumer is a movie star.
Okay.
A comedian. People want to go see her.
Right.
I mean, if Amy Schumer were playing Lady Macbeth, would you want to see that?
Yes.
Helen Mirren, actress.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's that breed of actress like Judi Dench,
right.
or
Dame.
Yeah. Where you go? Well, of course. Look at how good they are.
Right.
They're never bad. Even in awful movies, mm-hmm. they just show up. Right. They always pull it off. We have to take a break. Bridget Carey will join us in just a little bit. Actress or movie star, Bridget Carey.
Baseball broadcaster.
Bridget Carey will join us from CNET. That's coming up next. It's Bill F. and Harry Tynowitz on WGN. All right, it's Tech Tuesday, and every Tech Tuesday we check in with Bridget Carey, senior editor over at CNET. Bridget, I'm going to warn you right now, Wendy's a little hoarse today. Don't be panicked. Everything's fine. Harry Tynowitz sitting in for Wendy. Let's start out with Amazon Prime Day. Big day yesterday, huh?
Big day if you could even get on Amazon.
Really? Was it rough? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, rough. Was that pun intended?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No. Okay. Because when you get a fail page on Amazon, they show you a sad dog.
Oh no. Oh no. So obviously
he's a master at that.
They knew it was going to be a big day. Everybody. This is like it's the second busiest shopping day after Black Friday. But even knowing that, they didn't have the servers to make it all happen, right?
It seems that way. I mean, they always expand to more countries year after year. I mean, now you got Australia involved, and it's also longer than it was in the past. They make this thing 36 hours long, so today it's also going on all day long, and things look a little smoother right now, I would say.
All right, so the deal is, for those of you not steeped in the world of Amazon, you have to be an Amazon Prime member, and then the good deals you would normally get are even better during this, right?
There's a little workaround, actually. If you don't have Amazon Prime, which is that $100 a year subscription to get that 2-day shipping included all the time. Well, you can still see the sale prices. You just don't get free shipping. Now, if you do want to kind of work the system, you can sign up for a free 1-month trial and then cancel it. It's a little hassle. You always forget to cancel those things. But still, it's something you could still get, you know, a sale on if there's something you really, really want. It just pay the shipping.
Where are most of the deals? Is it in electronics, I'm guessing?
Yeah, a lot of electronics because, but also things you don't think about, like if you're really into trying out buying Amazon home goods type grocery stuff, like
yeah.
their nuts or their batteries or things like that. They always have sales there. They're trying to push a lot on their fashion side. So really, it's all over the map. I would say if you're into tech, obviously at CNET, we have this list going on of like all the biggest things in different categories, like best TVs, best audio for headphones. So if you're in a specific category there, mm-hmm. you can do some homework and search. But, you don't have to always just shop on Amazon. Because of what Amazon created here, they created this monster. Now, every other retailer is kind of getting on the day, and they're also having sales. So you can have sales on Newegg.com and Best Buy and even other types of retailers, like the Disney Store has a sale right now. So it's kind of like Amazon turned it into like a Christmas in July of sorts. Yeah.
Bridget, you know, I remember last time I was at Disney World, the Fast Pass was there, and it was such a big deal. Now, I don't know how you go there without getting a Fast Pass, and Great America has them too. And now, reading your latest, Disney has taken it a step further. If you can't Fast Pass in, there's a better way to hang out in line.
Yeah, so I got a chance to check out this new app they created. I'm a bit of a Disney nut because I grew up in Florida. And yes, the lines can get ridiculous in the summer. You don't want to be waiting with your kid for like 90 minutes for a ride or more. And so if you don't have a fast pass, sometimes you're stuck. And what Disney has done is created a new type of app that can keep you entertained if you are stuck in such a long line. Essentially, it's not like a typical mobile game. Think of it as something that's themed to the ride you're standing in. So I'm going to take one ride, for example, to help, you know, walk everyone through. Let's say you're standing in line for that Peter Pan ride, which is always the longest line, but by far.
Good ride.
Yeah, you can only play this game once your location's turned on, and it can tell you step foot in line. So it uses location. It uses Bluetooth beacons to know your location. And then you're playing these family-style games, so you're not having your nose buried in your phone, so to speak. You have to kind of shout out answers and pass one phone around between everyone in your group. So it forces you to actually talk to your family. That's a good thing, right? and then it has some special effects that can happen in line. So not at the Florida one, but in the California one, when you get to a certain point in the line, your phone becomes this remote control to turn on a lantern. All of a sudden, oh, Tinkerbell, a physical, actual Tinkerbell is appearing in front of your eyes. So it's not like all inside the app. It actually makes real-world effects appear. And Space Mountain has something that also happens when you play games. Now, not every ride has a game. They have some trivia to fill the time in other places and other spots. But here comes Disney going, okay, our lines are long, you know, our attendance is up, and when Star Wars World opens next year, they're also going to have a lot in an app to keep you occupied because you know people are going to be waiting for hours
sure.
to get into that.
Yeah. So it really does show that they care. They know that there's downtime, and they want to fill that time pleasantly for you. So that's fun, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah, because, you know, when I'm on vacation, I really don't want to pull out my phone. I want to be with the people I'm with. But then there is that medium, you know, spot you kind of get stuck in with, like, okay, how do you keep the kids entertained when they're antsy? It's hot, you know. So here they made something that could kind of feel like that.
Well, they used to have a game we used to play called Punch Your Cousin, where you'd see your cousin and you'd just punch him really hard.
And
do they still have that?
If you didn't have your cousin, you could just punch
somebody else's cousin.
Yeah.
I hope they never get rid of that.
Well, Bridget, but I give them credit for realizing that this cannot be like my son is staring into his phone, that they incorporate the whole family here.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of cheat sometimes and just play alone, but really it's hard because a lot of things are also like scavenger hunt type things. Some things are actually printed in the line. It'd be like, find the things that we printed in the physical walls that you're standing next to, so you have to look up. I like that.
Now, do they have an app that if your like spouse is yelling at you and you see a spouse who's not yelling at her husband, you could like maybe change spouses?
Oh, that's a good idea.
I'm looking for an ice cream in line kind of app, you know, an Uber for giving me snacks in those lines.
It's one way to
It's all coming. Yahoo Messenger is no more. What happened there?
Oh, man, this is the way of the world now. I mean, I kind of grew up in the world of AOL Instant Messenger. Folks had Yahoo, you know, Messenger. You know, we're all on text messages now, right? And so, you know, they finally pulled the plug. Yahoo, which is now owned by Verizon's Oath, they finally said, you know what, it's not worth keeping around. It's been around for 20 years. I think people really don't use it. After all, Yahoo itself has had problems with cybersecurity and breaches and whatnot. But it's just the idea that you realize, yeah, the world's moving on. But the thing that, like, made me kind of learn how to get, you know, social online and talk really fast and type better, these things are all going away now. It's all on the phone.
Isn't it funny, though, and we've seen so many of these over the years, things that are cutting edge and space age technology, a couple of years later, it's old news. Nobody wants to do it anymore. It takes too long. It's funny how that just cycles around, isn't it?
Yep. And then, now it's all AR masks on your face as you crop out the sadness of your life and just put the happy things on Instagram.
I don't know what you're talking about, Bill. Let me see if there's any faxes on this.
No, there isn't. Yeah. There isn't any faxes. Bridget, thank you so much. We greatly appreciate it. Now, just really quickly, catch me up on this Amazon Prime Day. You said it's still going on today. What time, if people are still interested in doing this, what time does it go until, or does that is that negotiable throughout the country?
I think it changes, but I want to say it's at the end of today sometime, like around, like, you know, 11 midnight, that kind of thing.
So,
and you know there's still going to be some last-minute deals because they just can't resist,
sure,
right?
Of course.
And it has to end today because the 17th is a prime number.
That's it. Right, Harry, great point. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you in a week, okay?
All right, take care.
It's Bridget Carey from CNET. Visit CNET on your computer. We'll take a quick break, then some news, and then magic is coming your way. It's Bill and Harry on WGN.
It's the Bill and Wendy Show on WGN Radio, 720. Steve Bertrand will be along at noon. John the King Williams at 1. Wendy's not here today. She's on vacay. So Bill left, kind enough to invite me, Harry, into the studio.
My hands were tied, Harry. Let's be honest.
Joey Cranford is here. He and his partner, Don Clark, have created the number one venue in the country for seeing just magic. It is the Chicago Magic Lounge, now in existence at 5050 North Clark, although there is no sign that says the Chicago Magic Lounge. Here with more on the topic is the co-owner and house MC, Joey Cranford. Joey, thanks for coming on Bill and Wendy with Harry and WGN.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a beautiful new studio, guys. It's unbelievable.
You.
The views
thank
are incredible. So if I start to kind of, you know, paying attention, I'm just looking at Navy
Pier. Don't worry. That's okay. You wouldn't be the first. All right. Harry has visited the club already. I have not been there yet, but I'm hearing great things.
Yeah. Yeah. We know you haven't been there yet.
No, I will be. I will definitely be there. You've been open for how long?
About 6 months now.
6 months. And is it what you thought it would be? Is everything going according to plan?
No, it's the worst decision we ever made.
Awful decision.
No, it's surpassing everything we could have hoped. You know, I mean, we started this as a passion project.
Yeah.
In 2015 in a basement. And, funny enough, I went on the WGN radio mm-hmm. 2 weeks after we opened, mm-hmm. and I talked all about the history of this project and the passion behind it. And it was Bosworth's show, Jen Bosworth's show.
Yeah.
And she said, so what's the ultimate plan? Just keep in mind, 2015, we had two shows under our belt. And I said, I think we can open up our own venue.
Yeah.
And she goes, how long have you been open? 2 weeks. So yep. Here we are, 2018, and we do have a one-of-a-kind venue for magic, and it's just amazing. The people are just coming out because we feel like we've tapped into something special.
The expression, spare no expense, comes to mind. You could have put this theater together for about a 15th of what you spent on it. It's elaborate. I went with my friend BJ, who runs a Northlight Theater, and he goes, this is breathtaking. Right. Why did you go to that level, to that extreme?
Because
why did it have to be so glamorous and glorious?
Because we wanted to take your breath away. You know, this has never been done. This has never been done like this in the Midwest, and we wanted to raise the bar. And I think, you know, right now we're looking for a new form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. You know, stand-up, and as we were talking earlier, you know, we both come from that stand-up world.
Yeah.
You know, right now, I feel we're looking for something else.
Yeah.
You know, audience is looking for that next thing. And if we just would have spent a 15th on it, people would have came in and said, oh, that was fun.
And I have to say this about magic. When you see stand-up live and on television, it's different, but it's not that different. When you see magic up live, mm-hmm. boy, is it different.
Yeah.
It really is. It just jumps.
If you're watching it from television, you have this, maybe it's camera tricks. Maybe I didn't see it close enough. You know, the camera pointed away, you know, and maybe they edited it down. But when you're watching that live, there's no mistake. It happened in front of you.
Go on, Harry.
I was going to ask, take us through a night. So some, you know, because I thought I was going to get to see like a magician on stage. But I mean, there's a magician in the bar. There's comedy magic. Table magic going on mm-hmm. prior to the show. There's an extra show after the show.
Right.
Take us through a night at the Chicago Magic Lounge.
We formed this concept based off of the old magic bars, and each one of them had their own individual parts and pieces. So we wanted to take all of those old forms and put them together into mm-hmm. one night, kind of, you know, essentially recreating a night at an old classic magic bar. So when you enter in through the speakeasy, if you get there early enough, you can watch the bar magic. It starts about 5 p.m., well before your showtime. When it's showtime, you go through another secret door, and that's when the show begins. I mean, honestly, the show begins when you walk into the place. And that's what we're trying to kind of educate people on, mm-hmm. that seeing a magic show is different at the Chicago Magic
yeah.
Lounge. The show begins when you enter. It's not about the stage. It's about the ambiance, the surroundings. It's atmospheric. So when you walk through that second secret door, you are You're seated at a table, maybe with some strangers, maybe with your group. It's a all very casual cabaret seating, tables and chairs and banquettes and multi-levels. And that's when the cocktail hour unfolds and close-up magic is done at your table. We have about five roaming magicians through there with each varying styles and different effects. And then they'll come to your table and perform for you, or perform for your group or your section. And then the next hour is the two acts, and that's a feature act and a headliner act. And very common to what people think of when they think of a magic show. Sure. So we have to put something on stage.
Right, right, right.
And that's the second hour. And about a third of the audience is seated in an upgraded section, which allows them to see the next level, which is the 654 Club, just at the end of the building. It's a 43-seat intimate space for what they call formal close-up magic. So yeah. Out front, the magicians are coming to your table. Back there, you go to the magician's table and watch a master of his craft.
You rotate the magicians fairly regularly?
We have a rotating ensemble, I'd say, of about 30 magicians.
Oh, you do.
But we also bring in magicians from New York, from L.A., from Vegas, from all over the country. And we're basically a showcase for the best magic in the country right now.
And the reaction from the Magic Nation across the country has been spectacular. You already talked about, I know when you had the one-year anniversary of your groundbreaking, you had magicians and some famous ones from all over the country that were just like so excited for you guys.
That was a special thing. We reached out to David Copperfield, and he's got connections in Chicago. A lot of people don't know that the historic connections that Chicago has, but
well, he did play the Magic Man here for a couple of years.
Right, and that was really his first time doing magic on stage.
I saw him in that when I was in high school.
What?
And I met him afterwards. A really nice guy. You had no idea what he was headed toward at the time, but boy, did he do well for himself.
We actually have that poster.
Do you?
On display at the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's excellent.
But yeah, Copperfield knows about us. I have in my office a signed Chris Angel good luck with the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Good.
It's really fun, you know. You know, the Magic Castle is very supportive of what we're doing. They are the home of the Academy of Magical Arts.
Yeah.
Pretty much every magic podcast or magazine, and they're all very supportive of what we're doing.
So they know about it, and they want to come out. They want to be a part of it, don't
right.
they? All these magicians.
They do.
Excellent. That's great news.
So you know, when I have friends come from out of town, like during the day, I would take them like to the Museum of Science and Industry. I'd take them to a Cubs game. Mm-hmm. Take them to Arlington Park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at night there was you could always like go to Second City or Zany's, but like Chicago Magic Lounge is quickly at that level where if you have friends coming in from out of town and they're only here for like three nights, you need to make one of those nights the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Good.
Yeah, it's absolutely unbelievable. And you mentioned the posters. I love the ambiance you've created. So, like, when was Chicago known for magic? Like, this table magic. When was that? Like, what year? What circa was that?
This all happened right after the turn of the century into the 1900s. Before that, our building is kind of built in a way, and our decor is built in a way to kind of show you that all along the exterior walls and in the library are these turn of the century magicians with Carter and Thurston and Keller and Hermans. These were the names of the magicians at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But as the new era was coming on, close-up magic became more of a thing. Most magicians would do close-up magic in like hotel lobbies or just kind of roaming around these events to promote their big shows. But in Chicago, we said, well, that's actually the best part of it. And there was a magician named Matt Shulian.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Shulian is the godfather of close-up magic in Chicago. He started doing magic in his father's restaurant. And around 1915, they opened the new one, Shulian's and Sons. That was at 1800 North Halsted, right down from Steppenwolf. And it was around then when Matt was performing magic tableside for guests at his restaurant.
Yeah.
And basically, you can point to that as ground zero of restaurant magic. Before that, it was done in big halls or in hotels.
Sure.
But it had never been done in a restaurant for people seated at their table between meals and specifically between drinks. So for the first time ever, you could actually sit down and laugh with a magician, share stories with a magician, but more importantly, you could drink with a magician the very first time. And that was specifically Chicago. Later, Prohibition would happen, so not a lot of drinking. Magic would go into the basement as well. Around the 1930s era, which is why we chose the decor that we did. So you have all of these turn-of-the-century paintings and posters staring into a 1930s era cabaret, because in the 30s, that's when the magic bar scene really popped up.
Harry Houdini came around in the 20s, what do you
well,
say?
Well, no, he was in Chicago at the Columbian Exposition.
Oh, he was,
yeah,
earlier.
He was kind of before he started escaping in New York, handcuffs and stuff. He was known as the King of Cards in Chicago.
Right. Let's take a quick break. Joey Cranford is here, the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Club, located at 5050 North Clark. You got to see it to believe it. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Laff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Our guest, Joey Cranford, the co-owner of the Chicago Magic Lounge, located at 5050 North Clark. Joey, just so you know, you're getting high praise on the text lines from people who have already been to the club.
Oh, wonderful.
Somebody referring to it as a must-see in all caps. So that's good news. You know who really enjoyed magic more than anyone I've ever seen in my life was Johnny Carson.
Oh, gosh. Well, he was a magician.
A great magician, but he had this thing where every once in a while he'd bring a magician on and they'd do desk magic, as he'd sit at his desk and they would do a trick for him, and it was just so much fun to watch his eyes get big.
He loved it.
Yeah.
He was like the original, like, fooler, you know, fool-esque kind of host.
Yes.
That show, I think we were talking about it during the break, Penn & Teller Fool Us. What I love about them is why they do that show is because they love magic so much, but they've just become surrounded with it, and they just want to be fooled again. They want to have those eyes of watching magic for the first time,
right?
Going, I have no idea how that's done, and that's what, when you watch Johnny Carson on those shows, he just abandons everything he knows, and he just wants to be fooled like a child, you know. It's just so great. I'm kind of in that way, as like you know, whenever a new act comes to town, I'll make sure to watch all the new acts and the traveling acts, and as I just want to be entertained.
How often does somebody fool you, though? It doesn't happen often, does it?
All the time.
Does it really?
Well, see, I didn't grow up in magic. You know, I mean, we were talking earlier, right? My roots are in acting and stand up and improv. And so I got into magic at about the age of 35.
Wow. Relatively late.
Now, Teller recently had surgery. He's okay?
I believe so.
Okay, good. Because I was wondering, like, in his honor, would there be no talking during Teller's
surgery?
That's
how it should be.
How will the surgeon ask for the instruments? You know, does he have, like, a beautiful assistant there, and he just
with his loving
hand
eyes,
out? She knows it's a scalpel.
The other surgeon's juggling, though, and talking real loud while the whole thing's going on.
Are we finally at a point where more women are doing magic?
Absolutely.
Because, good. Yeah. That's good to hear.
We actually we have it in our bylaws that we are actively seeking out diversity in magic, and it's important to us. It's important to the future of the art. We actually have started the Chicago Magic College, which is a it's a course like you might find at any improv club, but for people who want to get a little bit more educated on magic. We'll teach them the real stuff, enough to come out and entertain your friends and family, and we are we're really looking for the next generation of magicians, and our first class is fully diverse.
Excellent.
It's really wonderful.
Good to hear this.
We have you're being so kind. You're offering up a pair of tickets for Bill and Wendy, WGN Radio listeners.
What?
That's what it says. That's what it says in the yearbook, Jim.
Oh no, we're ruined.
What are the specifics? It's going to be a Wednesday night performance.
Yep, we want to invite people to see a Wednesday night show to see David Parr's Cabinet of Curiosities. David Parr actually fooled Penn & Teller on Penn & Teller's Fool Us. He fooled him badly. These guys usually have some kind of clue.
Yeah.
At the end of his effect, they talked for about 15 minutes. It was so uncomfortable for David on stage, and then finally they just looked up and go, "We have no idea."
Really?
And then just lower the trophy. We actually have the trophy in our library.
Oh, that's impressive.
So that everyone can see that. And we have the decks of cards he used, the bell. It's almost like he died and we just have his stuff, but he's fully alive and well.
He's come back from the dead.
So the deal is this. It's a Wednesday night performance, and if you want to win the tickets, be caller number 10 right now at 312-981-7200. Caller 10 will win that pair of tickets.
It's a magical number.
It's a magical number, isn't it?
The show's really fun. It's interactive. It's different than our signature shows. You know, I kind of walked you through the experience of the signature show.
Yeah.
This is similar, but you still get the bar magic outside. You still get the close-up magic at your table. But this night is one man only, and it's David Parr for about 60 minutes. And he just takes you through this cabinet, and he allows the audience to participate and say, which creepy object do you want to see? And he'll just pull down some weird, like, you know, ventriloquist dummy or this creepy baby he has. And
cool.
Just all this, like, voodoo dolls, and each one of them has a different creepy story. And it's like Halloween. Every every Wednesday.
Joey, you had me at Creepy Baby. As soon as you said Creepy Baby, I go, I got to be there.
Joey, you had a Creepy Baby.
For a little while, I did. All right, my
mom.
So you're
a creepy teenager now?
Yes. Yes, everything went well. My mom was a dance teacher, but for about a year and a half, she was an assistant for a magician named Melbourne Christopher. Do you know who that is?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. And she said that the training for that was so strange because it was a lot. I mean, you had to bend in certain ways for every trick.
And now, if we're going to get into the illusion, so we do mostly parlor magic, close-up magic. That's the world of illusions. The world of illusions, the female assistant or whoever is the assistant, they're the ones doing the magic.
I know.
The other ones just dance and point at the box. Like a magician just at that in that world just needs a big fan to blow their hair back and then dance and point at a box while the assistant is doing all the work.
And there's the beauty of it right there.
Yeah. I want to congratulate Scott from Chicago. Scott and a friend or a loved one will be attending.
Enemies. No, you must Scott, do not bring your enemy.
Bring somebody that you enjoy to the Chicago Magic Lounge. It'll work out a whole lot better. Is magic revered more in other parts of the world than the United States, or is this the best place to see magic?
No, magic is getting really big in Europe, really big in Asia. There's magic bars and clubs. What's really fun to when you look at the history of magic and what we've done with it, the magic bar and magic restaurants have even popped up in other places. I've been to a magic bar in Bath, England. Mm-hmm. I've been to a magic restaurant in Paris. There are these weird little magic enclaves, but it's huge. Like Spain, right now, Spain is the home of close-up magic.
Why would that be?
Just the people doing it out there. They have new thoughts behind it. And
so the style
amazing.
Is also different. Depending on where in the world you are, you get a different style of magic.
Completely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And what is in the future for the Chicago Magic Lounge?
World domination.
World domination, you say?
We'd like to open up, all over the place.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be. I mean, think about, we were talking again about the comedy clubs and how Zanies and the Improv have these circuits that they can create all over the country.
Yeah.
We see that as an actuality, that you can open a Chicago Magic Lounge in any city that has, number one, people who are ready to be entertained, a big market, but also you need the home for, magic. So we're a community builders as well, so it's not just, you can't just open up a magic show and say, well, we've got a rotating cast of 30 magicians. You have to have 30 magicians before you open one. So we look at other markets and say this would be a great place for a Chicago Magic Lounge.
Whose club or bar did you learn the most from? Is there one that you went to and went, boy, are they doing it right, we got to follow suit?
All of them are gone, so we couldn't go to them. They all went away in the 80s. And during the 80s there were about 9 open at once. A little bit of magic, Mr. C's Magic Lounge, Houdini's Pub, Shulian's New York Lounge.
Houdini's Pub was in Oak Forest, right?
Yep. Houdini's Pub and Pizza Magic.
Yeah. It was a few blocks from where I lived.
Oh, wow.
I went there a couple times.
That was Bill Malone's wife's bar.
Yeah.
And so I think, though, looking back, it really was a little bit of magic that inspired me the most, because there was so little written about it, but it had a secret entrance.
Yeah.
It had table magic. It had stage magic. It didn't have bar magic, so I borrowed from New York Lounge on that. But the comedy aspect of it, the just really fun night of it, that's really what I borrowed heavily from. And plus, I knew one of the former owners of Bit-O-Magic, the third iteration, a guy named Bill Weimer. Now, Bill was my mentor in all of this. He used to work all of them. Yeah. Wrote a book called Now You See Them, Now You Don't, My Life in the Magic Bars of Chicago. And that's what really inspired me to dig a little deeper into this concept.
Yeah.
And but talking with him was huge. And I think it was the little bit of magic stories that were like, yeah, I like it.
Is your favorite all-time athlete Magic Johnson?
Of course it is. How could it not be? Joey, I'm so happy for you. I mean, everybody has the dream, and you're making yours a reality. And boy, is that a great thing for everybody. Joey is the owner, co-owner of the Chicago Magic Club. You can visit it at Chicago Magic Lounge at 5050 North Clark. It's open 7 days a week?
7 days.
Perfect.
And special Sunday shows for youngsters.
Yeah. Excellent.
It's the only time that under 21 is allowed in without a parent. Yeah, we're 16 and up with a parent, but we do try to keep that adult nightlife.
Yeah. So Jasmine could come on a Sunday.
Yeah, on a Sunday. And you still do the 2-drink minimum for the kids? That's fine.
No. No, it's for the parents at that point. No drink minimums or anything like that.
That's Joey Cranford. Joey, great to meet you. Continued success. We'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news and then more show. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Doma T. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill, and that's Harry right over there. Harry's filling in for Wendy. She will return on Monday with gifts for everybody. Harry, I'm looking at the text line, and a lot of the texts in the last few minutes are magic-based because we were talking about this new magic club in Chicago. And somebody said, why aren't you guys discussing Ricky Jay? Do you remember Ricky Jay?
Yes, I forgot all about him, but I do remember Ricky Jay, an older comic.
A comedian slash magician slash actor. I think maybe his best role would have been on Deadwood, possibly. He was on the first season of Deadwood.
Good
but
call.
He had this ability, and I've never seen anyone else with this talent ever before. He could take a deck of cards, and he could shoot a card. Like, he would take any card and throw it at something, and he had pinpoint accuracy.
It's amazing. Like, the other day I was throwing out Starburst wrapper.
Yes.
And it landed on the edge of the wastebasket.
Like, oh.
You could do that 20,000 times. It would never happen again.
Right.
But Ricky Jay could do it, like, 9 out of 10 times.
Right. He had the ability. I know you've seen this in Major League Baseball parks, where every once in a while you'll get a guy who sells peanuts, and he could fling peanuts and hit a guy 18 rows away.
Mm-hmm.
He could just flip it, and he had that ability. So Ricky Jay could do this with cards, and you say to yourself, but a playing card doesn't, it can't fly. But no, he'd make it the way he threw it.
It's one of those weird talents. Is it Mary Lou Henner that has the talent where she can remember, like,
everything that's ever happened to her, the day that it happened?
So if you tell her you were born on October 15th, 1960,
she'll tell you the day of the week, if it was sunny or cloudy, what happened in the news that day. I've been told that there's only like 8 or 9 people in the world
in the
who
world.
Have that ability.
And she had a show about that.
Yes.
And I watched the first episode. I thought it was pretty good, and it was done in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. So that show was based on people who had only that ability or strange, like, one in a million abilities.
She was like either a cop or like somebody who helped a cop solve crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But they needed that technique.
They needed
her talent to help crack the cases.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a one in a million ability. What is yours?
I can make a souffle out of anything.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Out of anything?
Out of anything. For example.
So if I gave you 2 double D batteries and
alkaline souffle.
You would make alkaline souffle. Oh, that sounds delicious. Boy, that's tempting.
I remember jersey numbers. That's my
weird
thing.
Boy, I know you do.
That's my weird thing.
But not just from pros. You remember them from college players and anybody who's ever played any sport.
Sure.
I know. I've seen you do that.
When we were talking about Magic Johnson before, because Joey was nice enough to give away tickets to the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about asking, you know, what number was Magic Johnson in college?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody remembers.
At UCLA? Was he at UCLA?
Bill. Ah, ha, ha. Very funny, Bill.
Where was he?
You know he went. Bill. Come
Where
on.
Was he?
You
I
know.
Don't remember.
Yes, you do. Why are you doing this
Columbia
to me?
College? Was he?
Remember that big game against Roosevelt?
Boy, he creamed him.
Oh, he creamed
81
him.
81 points in 3 quarters.
Yeah. When they played the Art Institute? Oh, man.
Destroyed him.
But they had the coolest looking floor, but any basketball court. Michigan State,
Michigan
of course.
State, of course. Who said UCLA?
So I don't know.
It's embarrassing.
Magic was 32 in the pros because Kareem had number 33, which was Magic's college number.
Oh.
So I remember college. It's like Lynn Swann, who wore 88 with the Steelers, was 22 in college.
Yeah.
So I remember so that's my weird thing.
And
jersey
that's like
numbers.
Any player that's played a sport, if you've seen them play, you can remember their jersey number.
Right. Like linemen and stuff like that. And now it's easier for me. Like if somebody goes, who was, 79, who are your favorite 79s? I'll come up with a few. But what happens is somebody will mention a guy. And I'll just have his number.
So do you chalk that up to photographic memory, or what? How do you explain that ability?
I love sports, and I always like jerseys, and I have a few.
So it all came together that way.
And it just all came together. And I just think it's so great. And we'll meet people, and I've met people over the years.
Yeah.
A guy will be like a linebacker, and I'll go, oh, yeah, sure, 50. Harry knows your number probably. I'll go, 58. He goes, how do you know? But now what happens is people are like, oh, you went on footballreference.com.
No, you just know it. It's in your head forever.
Right. There's so many sites now that you could just pop on for a second and get their jersey number. But if you took away my phone, I'd probably know jersey numbers.
I can remember Doug Buffon's. It's 55.
Yes. 55 is a big number for the Bears.
Yes.
Because Otis was 55.
Otis Wilson was also 55.
Lance was 55.
Bert Hooten was number 40.
Burton wasn't finished to finish your sentence.
41, 2, 4,
44.
6, 4. Yeah,
yeah, 46 with the Dodgers.
Yes, of course, everyone knows that.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah. What Harry Chappas your, was number one.
Harry Chappas was number 13.
Jim Otto was double zero.
Jim Otto was double zero.
Yeah, so I remember three of them.
There you
I got the same ability you have.
Yes, you do. But what would you say is your, you have many hidden talents.
Yeah.
What would you say is your, like, bizarro thing?
My one in a million ability?
Mm-hmm.
I have the uncanny ability, Harry, to be able to predict the past.
Wait a minute.
It's true.
Wait a minute.
If something has happened sometime in the near past, I can usually...
Tell us?
I can tell you exactly how it will have gone down, yeah.
Okay, so like you could probably predict like if something's going to have happened in Russia in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I probably could have done that if I wanted to. So this is something that you would think I could parlay into a $1 million business, and I've not been able to so far. But it's at some point it'll catch up. People will be impressed by it. It hasn't happened yet.
Like, so, if you like, you probably know who won the Super Bowl between the Eagles and New England that was played in February.
No, I can't do that one. That's too hard.
It's too recent.
Yeah, it's way too recent.
But like you would know, like when the Patriots were 17-0 and they were going for the
their last game, I'll say,
when they were 18-0.
Yeah, how about that?
That's crazy.
Pretty amazing, right? Now with yours, mm-hmm. I bet that when you share this with loved ones, you get a range of emotions. Like, who cares?
That's exactly right.
Right.
That's exactly right.
I know.
Right.
One night, my wife and I are driving along. This is when Larry King had his own late-night radio show. Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear that show?
I don't think I did.
So Larry King had a late-night show, and they were talking about the Oakland A's of the 70s.
Oh, what
and
a
somebody
great
called
team.
Up and said, I can't remember their lineup. And I rattled it off. I rattled off all the players and where they batted,
awesome.
Right?
That's awesome.
And my wife was my girlfriend at the time, and she was sitting next to me, and I quote, she goes, "Who cares?"
What is wrong with
her? You would think somebody would care, but
doesn't sound
other
like
than
Terry
Charlie
at all.
Finley and me, nobody cared.
Doesn't sound like a Bert Campaneris was on that team.
Yeah, Campy Campaneris.
And Joe Rudy. 26.
Yeah, Gene Tennis.
Yes,
Sal Bando. Dick Green.
Dick Green, yes. Green was second baseman.
Yep.
Reggie, of course.
Reggie Jackson, of course.
Reggie was 9 on the A's.
Bill North.
44. Right. Bill North was a former Cub.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was on the score for a while,
Wait,
too.
I just heard my wife somewhere in Chicago.
Who cares?
All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show coming up. It's Bill and Harry in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz. Wendy is on vacation and will return on Monday. Harry, I'm looking at a story right now, and I keep thinking to myself, my eyes are deceiving me. How can this possibly be? Last year, we had a horrible, horrible incident take place in Las Vegas, a shooting where the shooter was up in the Mandalay Bay and shooting at concert goers.
Yeah.
You remember the story. Horrible, horrible story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Today comes word that Mandalay Bay, the hotel where this took place, where the shooter was holed up, is suing victims.
Come on.
No, it's true. The corporate owners.
That doesn't make sense.
The corporate owners of the Mandalay Bay Casino have filed suit against the victims of last year's Las Vegas concert mass shooting, claiming that they, Mandalay Bay, has no liability for the massacre. This according to a published report that took place yesterday on Monday. MGM Resorts International went to federal courts in Nevada and California and took on more than 1,000 shooting victims, saying that claims against the hotel must be dismissed, in quotes. Plaintiffs, they say, have no liability of any kind to the defendants, the complaints argue. Las Vegas lawyer Robert Eglett, who is representing several of the victims in the case, told the paper that the hotel's unusual action is a preemptive strike to get the cases heard in federal court instead of a state court. Eglett said that MGM must believe that it has better chances of victory in a federal court. Ghoulish, part one. I understand their motive here. Is to, before they're getting sued by victims, to say, oh yeah, before you sue us, we are in turn suing you, because that isn't going to fly. But when you have a PR nightmare like this, now, let's be honest, the hotel chain, the MGM chain, mm-hmm. which owns the Mandalay Bay, is certainly not responsible for this guy picking that hotel to do the shooting out of.
A lunatic could have picked any hotel.
Right. It worked out for what he for the horrible, horrible act that he wanted to do. That was the hotel that he chose. So if you're them, you could argue that in court all you wanted to, because that's a fair argument. But for them to sue the victims, is beyond ghoulish.
That doesn't sit right.
Isn't that awful?
That's
horrible,
terrible.
Horrible.
These, you know, the Vegas hockey team.
The Golden Knights.
When, you know, they had, you know, they're an expansion team this past season, and they had like the greatest season any expansion team ever had, and they talked about the team was so much more about hockey. It was about the community. It was, you know, that at the time of this horrific tragedy, where the majority of the victims were from Las Vegas.
Right.
You finally had Vegas getting this professional sports team, their first one ever.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of like used this team as like a way to come together.
Yeah.
And the opening night of the Vegas Golden Knights, they had the first responders, they had, you know, victims, family members on the ice. And that throughout the year, this team was doing these amazing things, and they kept tying it back into this is something wonderful for the residents.
That's great that they did that.
And Vegas strong, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, the rest of the country was like, oh, man, I'd love to see Vegas do well. Obviously, I love the Blackhawks, but I'd love to see Vegas do well. What a great story, you know, for everything horrific that just happened there. And this is like the opposite.
Right.
This is like a collective kick in the nads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do you do this?
I don't know. As you know, anytime there's a tragedy, even if you're not responsible, case in point, the guy who was poisoning Tylenol years and years ago, it wasn't Tylenol's fault.
Right,
he was
right.
Just throwing things, horrible things in Tylenol, and people were dying. So all of a sudden, Tylenol's like, well, what do we do now? We have to figure this out. This could be the end of us, right? What do we do? If you're Mandalay Bay, you should be doing the exact opposite and saying, we're going to do anything we can
right.
to win you back over, to let you know that this was not us. This was a guy who horribly made a decision that took place in our hotel.
I got a open letter from Papa John's yesterday.
Did you really?
Yes, saying that... that were horrified by what this guy John said.
John Schnatter.
Yes, and that this is just disgusting, and that Papa John's has X amount of employees, and this is nowhere near acceptable, and we will be, a lot of the executives will be going now to the different stores, different Papa John locations to talk to Papa John employees.
Yeah.
We want to know how their reaction to this. We want to be as transparent as possible. It was like this great letter where the reality of it is that most people saw the commercials for years during NFL games.
Right.
And they think of Papa John as the guy that owns Papa John's
right.
and runs Papa John's. And they're like, this is just so terrible. We're so horrified by what he said. And we don't want anything, you know, that this one person said this, not the hundreds of thousands of people that work for Papa John's.
Right, sure.
I don't know what the number is, but, you know, it was all about how we're so sorry that he said it, and we're going to do all these things to try to become more aware, and you know, this is in no way a Papa John's thing. It's the guy who invented Papa John's, you know, who's responsible for this. None of the Papa John's employees are.
Well, they're in a strange position because... most businesses of that size, mm-hmm. I don't know how many Papa John's there are nationwide, but there's a bunch. So they don't really sell themselves the way Papa John's did is he's the center of attention. This is
right.
the guy that started this company, and everything we do is because of this guy. And then this guy, John Schnatter, said some horrible things during this conference call, and all of a sudden they've got to reconfigure themselves because his name is on the company. John's name is on the company,
right.
Papa John's. His face is all over the place. Now, I noticed yesterday, I don't know if this is just a fluke thing or whatever, but I saw more Papa John's commercials yesterday than I've seen in a long, long time. I watch a lot of sports. You're always going to get a sprinkling of them. But yesterday, I saw a bunch of Papa John's commercials with him, of course, nowhere to be seen. It was the rest of the company working hard to get your pizza to you. But is it too little too late for them? Can they rebound after this?
I think they can, and I applaud them for what they're doing, which is coming right out and saying, this was said.
Yeah.
You know, they're not dusting it under the rug. They're not waiting 3 months for it to go down. They're saying,
right.
oh, my God, what was said was terrible. It was awful, horrific. We're offended by it. We understand why you're offended by it, because we're offended by it also. But understand, it did not come from this company.
But he's still the principal owner, even though he's no longer the CEO. And I don't know if you saw the story. They banned him from headquarters.
Yeah,
he
got kicked out of headquarters.
They wouldn't let him
in
the building.
So how does that work?
But if you own the company, he's the principal owner of the company by far. So what happens now?
I have no idea. And I don't pretend to. I always got nervous when I talked about politics because I have my opinions, but I don't know how politics works.
Yeah.
You know, if he's the principal owner, it's still his company.
Do you take your? But if you're the rest of the company, do you like today file for a new name? Do you find a new name right away, or do you go, this will bowl over in a couple of weeks? Nobody will remember it. We'll just keep the name and see what happens. What do you do?
I would be trying to separate myself. I would be trying, you know, like when Donald Sterling, the older guy that owned the Los Angeles Clippers, when he made his horrible comments, they got him out. Isn't there a way to force him out?
Well, they did it kind of with Harvey Weinstein as well.
Right, but that's his company.
That was his company. He and
DreamWorks?
His brother. Yeah. No,
not DreamWorks, sorry, Weinstein.
Weinstein Company, right? Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah.
So they had to transition away from that as quickly as they possibly could. So, got to see what happens.
Well, it's a publicly traded stock, so it's got to be a public company. So there must
be a publicly traded. True, but he John Schnatter is by far the principal owner. Nobody comes close to him. He's got most of the shares. He's the guy. I mean, they've been able to shut him out as CEO, but you can't shut him out as owner, can you?
In the NBA, the commissioner of basketball for the good of the sport said this guy must sell his team by this date. And he said he gets the right to,
But that's a franchise. That's not... I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
Very tough. That other voice you hear, that's Steve Bertrand. He'll be by in just a little bit. Well, he's by now, but in a little bit, he'll explain what he's got coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Harry and I are headed toward the stream.